charities and NPOs are undertaking are financial plans. Too often in the past have not really focused as heavily as they should on the growth plans for the future. And I think we've borne some of the consequences as a result of that. As we look a little bit into the future, to see if some of the trends that are facing us right now are still applicable, we may be a little bit disturbed. We're seeing, for example, based on USDOT and AASHTO needs analysis, that VMT is actually declining and has been declining over the last few years. There are a variety of interesting observations for why that is the case. One is that we've got as many vehicles, we have more vehicles than we have drivers, and we have basically maxed out as much VMT as we could. The reason this is important as a trend is if we look for new revenue sources for transportation, for example, what Oregon is doing, looking at VMT pricing, as two of the commissions at the national level are have either looked at or are looking at VMT as a major way, then this may indeed have a problem. But if you look at this issue from a mobility, not a VMT, we're seeing that our mobility is increasing. And what appears to be one possible explanation for that is that people are maybe missing their automobiles, but moving to transit. And unfortunately, our models at the USDOT and the AASHTO level don't deal with the question of change in modes. And so we may be missing a whole category of information that may end up being very critical for us, which is the modal shift. If we look at what's been happening to transit, it's been increasing significantly. The other part of that is that we are also seeing the infilling and the movement back into the cities of people of my generation, as they want more health care, their kids are grown, they want more public transit and other transit transportation alternatives. So we're seeing the movement back into our urban environments, which again may not bode well if we're looking at a VMT. And certainly we're seeing right now the effects of $4 a gallon gasoline on VMT, as well as on gas tax revenues. So these trends that we're talking about are going to be important not only on the systems that we look to build as transportation experts and officials, but also in terms of how we are going to be financing our transportation system. As we move more and more towards consideration or towards smart growth, that will have a significant impact on how we are undertaking our transportation. If we look at transit-oriented development, that will change very much the nature of our investments for transportation. So I've rambled on enough, but this issue is very important not only to the future of what we're going to be investing in, but I think also how we are going to be financing our transportation system. And I'm delighted that I've got three people who know a lot more about this than I do here on the panel. I'm going to start off with Ed Cole. Ed, if you wouldn't mind joining us, Ed from Tennessee.
Secretary, thank you very much. I'll get down here and we'll open this up. There we go. I think it's the F5 key. We should be good to go. There we are. thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and to be obviously with Bill and the work that he is undertaking, as you can see, with leaders, to be able to frame the issue as quickly and completely as he just did is a reason they're leaders, as we heard yesterday. And with Kobe and Charlie to follow, I think I'm probably going to be the one in the middle, kind of more traditional on this approach of how we're using our planning process to deal with changes in behavior and fuel prices and so on. So I'd like to kind of move right into it. We're supposed to introduce ourselves. I will just simply say I have the fortune, and I see some of my Tennessee friends out here in the audience, of being the first assistant commissioner in Tennessee for, responsible for environment and planning. Historically, that role was a part of the chief engineer's function, and when Commissioner Nicely and Governor Bredesen came in 2003, it was decided to really elevate these areas that obviously are linked very closely into a key component of the department structure. So it's been my privilege with many years in state government and local government in Tennessee to be able to move into that position. And we've really developed, I think, the significance of the environmental perspective, and more broadly and more importantly, certainly here today, the planning perspective in the Department of Transportation in Tennessee. So I will jump right in. What I would like to do today that I think was certainly the charge to this panel is to look at what we're doing in Tennessee to keep our planning approaches consistent with trends that we're all experiencing together. And to do that, the anchor that I will use is our Plan GO. It was actually our first ever long-range transportation plan, Tennessee's very first ever. We had the STIP and those kinds of things, but this was a much more comprehensive plan. And that plan was completed a little over 2 years ago. So the presentation I will make will cover the features and the process that we used in developing that plan, and then address some of the issues that are facing us now that even in 2 years have changed dramatically. When the plan was developed, and we'll talk a little bit later about how we worked with regions and with local communities, local elected officials, state officials on that, four trends emerged as needing attention in our 25-year strategic vision, our 10-year program of investments, and Bill is right, it's all about money at the end of the day, and then our 3-year transportation plan that is submitted to the state legislature on a rolling cycle every year. Obviously, growth was a key issue. Tennessee is not unusual compared to other states in the Southeast. We are experiencing growth itself, and we're experiencing diverse trends. Bill did mention infilling. I do think, and I'll come back to this, I think one area of our demographic study that we built into our plan didn't really reflect the patterns of infilling that we're now seeing. We're beginning, certainly in our four major metropolitan areas in Tennessee, but I think we have seen an increase in that, particularly with the price of fuel. Time will tell what that really means. Economic development, a key part of the plan, that transportation is the connector. Economic development is the well-being of people and their jobs and in cost of living and mobility, those kinds of issues. And one of the things that was so important in our state, and I think probably throughout the Southeast, is we sometimes forget we're a rural state. Population-wise, we're about 50-50 in metropolitan rural areas, but the legislature and our political process in Tennessee is still dominated by a rural perspective. And so in the economic development view in the plan, we paid particular attention to mobility in the rural areas, even though we know that about 80% of our congestion is in our metropolitan areas, which I think is pretty standard across the country. Third point that came out of the plan was the backlog of work to be done. And I think this is something that we're all experiencing. As we looked at what we wanted to do, we had to talk about what we had already committed to do. And so there was a backlog of projects that had been defined over the years, some very well founded, others made on the basis of a political promise. But they were in the system and there were expectations and we had to deal with that. And finally, the emerging issue that we had not really paid a lot of attention to in our business historically, but we are now, is the importance of freight. Memphis, for example, is probably, if not the leading, the second leading intermodal center, aviation, rail, truck, and barge in our country. And we're experiencing intermodal issues not only there, but in other places, plus just the demand on our network, particularly our highway network. And then let's turn quickly to things that have happened over these past 2 years that we're now going back in to adjust in our planning process. Number one, we're all feeling it. With the dramatic increase in the price of gasoline and diesel, we did not anticipate that. Models didn't give us projections on that. We knew something probably would happen in the overall energy shortage arena. We knew there might be issues of foreign supply that could cause spikes, but what we're seeing was not really built in. So we're looking at the impact, trying to project VMT, looking at the impact on changing freight patterns. I think probably from one perspective, we see more public interest in choice than ever. It goes back to Bill's point about transit, and instead of just having a statistic about transit ridership, we need to get inside the minds of us people when we're making that decision. Is there another choice than just using my car for the trip, whatever that trip may be? And then we're also having to go back from a revenue perspective and look at fuel efficiency assumptions. Really tightening down the CAFE standards was not really on the table for much discussion 3 years ago. It's clearly there now, and not only the CAFE standard on fossil fuel cars and trucks, but I think we're looking at alternative fuels and the impacts there. Second major point, we did not anticipate, probably should have, but didn't know how to put value to it, the federal revenue cutbacks that we've all experienced, particularly the rescissions, and then just the we used basically safety lieu projections, which we all know were higher than we are realizing. Thirdly, we did not anticipate, we had some assumptions, but did not anticipate the significant cost increases for our construction, maintenance, operations activities. So we're having to go back and revisit that. And then I think finally, the collapse on the I-35 bridge just brought this to more visible light. I think we're seeing, certainly in smaller communities, but even in the larger communities, a growing interest in the infrastructure issue. The tax issue, the cost of government providing not only mobility through highway and transit, but also utility costs, infrastructure investments in water and sewer, wastewater treatment, those kinds of things. And that's significantly changed over the last several years. The guiding principles that were in the initial plan that we're still using today are pretty straightforward, although we went through a lengthy process with regional groups and local groups all over the state of Tennessee to develop this. And it was an exercise that's paying dividends now as we face these issues that I just went through. There's a common language about what we're trying to accomplish with our transportation system. That we're trying to, first and foremost, nobody doubts this, we've got to take care of what we have. We've got to take care of, and it's costing more. Secondly is mobility. We have to move this growing and more diverse population and the trends therein. Thirdly is to support our economy. Kind of you can see the themes going back here. Fourthly, and very important, but it's fourth, is maximizing safety and security. And our plan did, the genesis was well after 9/11, and the security issue is an important part of that plan. Building partnerships for livable communities. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that in a moment, but we were very, very insistent and very gratified to find the linkage between land use planning and local planning process, not just land use, but amenities. Convenience, the kinds of things that people define when they say, this is the neighborhood I like, and how does what we're doing at the state DOT reinforce those values that are present primarily through local government. Promoting environmental stewardship, given my responsibility, you can imagine this is extremely important, but I don't think it's because we have environmental people that this is important. I'll never forget the day one of our maintenance workers at a maintenance garage in West Tennessee got up and said, I'm tired of being criticized for polluting the streams. He's, I live in the country, I fish, I drink that water. Nobody has taken time to show me what we can do better to deal with the disposal of hazardous waste at our maintenance facilities. And the room got quiet, and we all realized it's real easy to criticize ourselves for our activities, but leadership was needed, and the core values of people that have been under the most fire for environmental damage, the core values were right there with the rest of us. Water and air and land are things we treasure. Just show us how we can do what we have to do in a way that's sensitive to that. And then finally, the whole process had to develop financial responsibility. The context for working through that process and now the updating process, we have 11 MPOs in our state, And we have developed, out of this long-range plan process, our first ever, and there are several in here. We give thanks to North Carolina and several other states where we just blindly stole ideas. But we've now developed 12 rural planning organizations, RPOs, and those 12 rural planning organizations fill in the map so that every entity, local government in Tennessee is a part of either an MPO or an RPO. As those have matured together with the ongoing activities of the MPOs in Tennessee, we then took the planning process, and this is underway now in all cycles of the planning process, of developing project evaluation criteria that feed off of the general principles that we just talked about. And those criteria, and I won't take time, don't have time this morning to go through them and the ratings and the scoring that we do, but dealing with congestion relief, access and mobility, economic opportunity, goods and freight movement, safety and security, the level and type of public and community support, environmental impacts and possibly environmental enhancements, and funding considerations. And you can see then if you take those guiding principles and align them with our project evaluation criteria. This was real important. This is where planners came off the shelf. Because if we left it in this wonderful, these glowing words I just used about guiding principles, and that was it and put away and we went back to work, I think this project and that project, but not this one, and didn't connect the dots, then we weren't linking our planning process with our prioritization process. And through this activity at the MPO level, the RPO level, and certainly then when that rolls up to the decision areas that we have at the DOT. Now, embedded in the long-range plan, and a part of this, I probably will just take a minute here, was where do we start with all of this? How do we lay the first vision out, and how do we keep reinforcing it? Well, like all of you, we had a number of modal plans that had been developed. We had rail plans, a statewide waterways plan. We had bike ped, primarily from local governments. We had our statewide aviation plan, our ongoing highway planning, and we had our mandated programs. And so we had to take those where they were relevant and work with our public stakeholder groups to build them in. We had to look at the public involvement process itself and how we were listening. And you can see there the kinds of things that we did. And that ranking of needs was important because that's goes back to that needs assessment that I just mentioned. And then obviously the MPO plans through the sort of standardized, federally defined MPO planning process. And then the analysis of challenges and opportunities, and that's kind of where we are now. We're reinvestigating all of that with the trends that I just mentioned that we're going through. In the long-range plan, at the vision level, this don't worry about the numbers completely, but we did a – the citizens said, you got to put value to this. Again, it goes back to what Bill was saying. It's all about money at the end. When we took those modal needs, assembled in the way we just talked about them, and then looked at our own funding capabilities and put the two together, and by the way, modal needs were just needs. There was a wish list that was much larger than that, factoring in the pipeline projects that were already committed to. We ended up over a 25-year period in $2005 dollars. With about a $16 billion gap just to do the basic work. And this is just TDOT, by the way. This is money that would flow through the State Department of Transportation budget, federal and local, federal, state, and local, that flows through our budget. And so that became an important discussion point, that $16 billion gap. And there are copies I think will be available if you want to look at the different modal components of that. All right, then shifting gears. That was the point was made, here's this long-term need, and here's a funding gap, but now let's put something more specific to it, and let's talk about actual strategic initiatives over the next 10 years. As you can see, we're ratcheting down here to a three-year program that gets recycled every year that goes into our funding and our legislative approvals. And we quickly saw at the 10-year program level through the discussions with our stakeholders and the inputs that we were receiving sort of three broad categories. And again, communication. We heard yesterday from Pat in the session about how important it is to communicate. Well, public couldn't many of our citizens that were in our stakeholder groups couldn't remember all those matrices and numbers. And it boiled down to this after we talked it through in several sessions all across our state, that basically our 10-year program needed to be accountable to relieving congestion, allowing people to make choices in mobility. And in terms of the, particularly in terms of freight and people travel, and particularly highway mode, look at corridors, not projects. And we've heard some themes presented here. I know yesterday that was discussed, Florida DOT. A number of you are obviously focusing on corridors. So where we are today in that 10-year program to put more specificity to the corridor investments that we're going to be recommending in Tennessee is we focused on our strategic corridors, and you can see them there, both the interstate corridors and our major U.S. highway network across our state. And we had to go back to that rural legislature and make the point as we dealt with those corridors, because there are a lot of counties that aren't there. And we had to talk about, while important, completing U.S. 64 across the southern tier of our state from Memphis to Chattanooga. And we had to talk about linkages to that corridor if it were completed, even though your particular county is not going to have a section of that roadway investment physically undertaken. So that's the dialogue that began. We have just completed our first major corridor study, the I-40-81 corridor, basically from Memphis up to Bristol on into Virginia. We will be announcing or releasing the final draft, not the final draft, the final analysis of that later this month, toward the end of August. And we have just initiated the study of the I-75 corridor, which is by far our more congested corridor in Tennessee. And then we'll be following that with I-24 and then I-65. Won't take time to go through it, but as corridor studies, there is a very, very close and detailed analysis of our performance using those evaluation criteria before and looking at it. And we started with the premise that it would cost us $5 to $8 billion to six-lane I-40 all the way across our state. So that's off the table. That's just off the table. So we've backed down to that, and these are the kinds of, you can't read it, don't worry about it, but it deals with climbing lanes, it deals with interchange improvements, it deals with ITS expansion, a number of things that are doable, programmable, as we look at our resources. The next area of update ties to what I just mentioned about the interstate corridors. We had a commitment in our legislation, as many of you probably have, back in 1986, the Better Roads Program, which ended up leading to a gas tax increase, one of our last in Tennessee, that we would connect every county seat, all 95 counties, with a four-lane highway to the nearest interstate. And if we do that, we've done good. Well, at the present time, there are 21 county seats that don't have four-lane access to the nearest interstate. And we're going through a process now using the University of Tennessee Center for Business to help work with local officials and to say there may be a better solution for investments can be made that building a four-lane connector that's going to carry very little traffic. And the day of the plant coming to your town when there's a four-lane road, that day is gone. It's over. We all know that. Those plants have left. Has nothing to do with four lanes or eight lanes. The mega sites are obviously, and for us, no offense to my Alabama colleagues here, but we did land Volkswagen. But that's the kind of thing we're going to see with the little textile plant or the little manufacturing facility because of this. So we're in serious discussion with mayors and county executives and local officials and through our RPOs primarily to come up with strategies so that each of the counties that are remaining, there is a strategy of what we're going to do to improve mobility. The example I would love to use is up in the far, it's not on this, but up in the far northeast corner, Johnson County, the local officials are much more interested in having access on U.S. 412 over to Boone, North Carolina, than some kind of four-lane access from Johnson County, Mountain City, to Interstate 81 over in the Tri-Cities area. Duh. It makes sense. Well, we have not had problems selling that concept, so we're working on that really relatively short segment for our part and working with our colleagues, some of you in North Carolina. This goes, Bill, I keep playing off you. You did profound in your comments. This, a third area of updating that's extremely important is exactly what Bill mentioned in the introduction, documenting transit needs. We basically, in our first go-around with our long-range plan, just changed percentages. We will have this percent instead of that percent using transit. And we multiply how many vans and small buses and large buses and got the local transit providers to give us the data. And we just came out in the plan and said, we're going to increase by this percent. We didn't really deal with the mode choice question. We really didn't deal with the kind of rural, particularly in our rural areas, transportation network that would meet the needs of this growing and diverse population in our rural areas, who in many ways are more auto-dependent than in our urban areas. And basically have a rural transportation system, public transportation system, driven by federal funding for Medicare and job access, reverse commute, those kinds of things. So Right now, we're undertaking a major, and many of you, I think, are doing the same thing, evaluation with our transit partners on what are the real choices that are available, what investments are strategic, and then using those to determine the kind of mode choice that might occur if those investments took place. And factoring into it the price of the fuel, the price of the vehicle, the issue of real estate, and we talked yesterday in another session about the whole agricultural sector and how that how the economics of that sector relate to the needs for mobility, whether it's hauling switchgrass to an ethanol plant or whether it's getting somebody who's living on a farm by herself in for medical services. So we're trying to work through those issues. We have no easy answer, and I think we're having to really hold our transit partners accountable, and so far that's been a good dialogue. Not selling out here the urban transit providers we have, as you all do in your large cities, but in many ways their planning process is a bit more mature, and we're able to sort of plug into that process. It's the other parts of our state that are concerned. Now, as with the 25-year program, the citizens wanted to, okay, what's the gap? What's our funding resource? How much I got to move. Okay. $2 billion gap. Don't worry about it. This is the key. This is the key thing for you to take a look at. If you look at our 10-year investment plan, the orange line was that 25-year plan that I showed you a moment ago, 25-year vision. And then we got into looking at our revenue projections, again, looking at trends as they were 3 years ago. And you can see now that $2 billion gap in the 10-year program, we estimate now is more like $5 to $6 billion and growing all the time. Combination of costs and the revenue issues. As I mentioned before, the three-year program is developed with the guiding principles. We haven't started any new starts in our system in the last 2 years in Tennessee, and we're actually going back and taking a look at the pipeline to see if there are some that we would push back even further, no matter what the commitments were. Final thing I'll mention to you is our revenue tools. This is nothing new. Everybody in this room is going through this, so I'll just leave it at the fact that in Tennessee, we're a pay-as-you-go state. We have no bond financing. We basically get our revenues from car registration fees and a gas tax, diesel tax, and so we're looking at all options. One area that we're looking at to bring to the table in the discussion as these results come back in is tolling. We have our General Assembly passed tolling legislation in 2007. We were given the authority to go out and seek two pilot tolling projects. That process is underway. There are candidates for tolling across the state. It's new for us. We're probably in the last tier of states, and certainly in the Southeast, in terms of moving into the tolling world. But we have to at least look at that in terms of the potential revenue source that it provided. So, in conclusion, our next steps in the planning process is to keep updating our administration and our legislative partners on the process of this. The General Assembly has convened a special legislative study committee looking at revenue issues. They will be meeting this fall. And the updates that I've just given to you in more detailed form will be provided to them on the expense side of the ledger, and then we'll be talking about the different options that we have on the revenue side. So in a nutshell, that's where we are in Tennessee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ed. Your growth in Memphis and the freight certainly has changed, and 10, 15 years ago, I'm sure that wasn't even on the radar screen. And yet, I think for many of us, freight movement is having a significant impact on our capacity of our roads as well as the conditions of our roads. And as fuel prices continue to increase, our agricultural folks, as well as those dealing with in international commerce through containers, are trying to stuff more and more into those boxes, or more grain, or cotton, or switchgrass onto their vehicles, making overweight trucks a growing phenomena and problem for our rural bridges and rural bridges and rural bridges and.